Hey guys, thanks for joining me on another episode of Convince Me here on NPR Illinois and the Front Row Network. I am your beloved host, Larry Smith. Well, maybe not beloved. We don't really know each other that well. Unless we do, and you hate me. Or you love me. This bit's getting old already. So this episode is a really cool one. It's with Rena Kalm, and she is an awesome stand-up comic. And we talk about some really cool stuff. We talk about the different focuses she's going into now that comedy is kind of on hold. We did record this a couple months ago, so things are changing a little bit. But, you know, it's still a very interesting conversation. And also, we talk a little bit about family and how when you're pursuing artistic endeavors, sometimes they don't believe it's a real job. And so it's just a really interesting conversation. Also, just keep in mind that if you like Rena, you'll get to see her live on September 24th at Buzzbomb on Adams Street here in Springfield, Illinois. It's going to be a free show, but it's going to be socially distanced outside. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yours truly will get to feature for her. And my good buddy Al Nimson is going to be hosting that show. So it's going to be really solid. So come out and have a good time. Treat a Thursday night like a Friday night. And have some fun with this. I got to take my headphones off so I can actually hear myself talk. Also, I want to mention that the Front Row Network has started a Patreon. And it's really cool. It's going to have some really cool content. I am definitely coming up with some special stuff to do for the Patreon. So make sure to check that out. Go to the Front Row Network's Facebook page. There's some information there. And, you know, just find out. Also, I want to throw a shout out to my buddy Jeff Govednik, stand-up comic and musician extraordinaire, who wrote the theme song for this show special. And it is awesome. I will probably be using the old theme song because it's already connected to this episode, but you'll get to hear it at the end. And then from this point forward, every new episode will have the legit theme song from Jeff Govednik. So check him out on Facebook. Also, one teensy tiny little thing. The Illinois Times has finally decided to add a comedian slot to the best of. And right now they're in the nominations. Now I am nominated. But in order to make it through, you have to have X amount of nominations. So if everyone could take the time, go to Illinois Times website, go to that best of 2020 and just make sure to nominate me. And then I will be begging for your votes if I make it through. And if I do make it through, I will try to do something special. I don't know what. I've definitely show up to the black tie affair in a Hawaiian shirt and loud pants and roast them for not having comedians there first or before or last. Man. Anyway, this is a great episode. I really appreciate you guys listening. We have had more listeners on here than I expected for the first two episodes, which is stinking awesome. So here we go with Rena Kalm. Thanks again.
Hi, welcome to Convince Me, podcast brought to you by the Front Row Network and NPR Illinois. I'm your host, Larry Smith. I also happen to be a stand-up comic. And for as long as I can remember, I've been fascinated with what people love, what they don't love, what makes them laugh, and what they don't laugh at. And on this show, we're going to explore a little bit of all that. So thanks for joining us, and here's Convince Me.
Thanks for joining me again for Convince Me. I'm your host, Larry Smith. Convince Me brought to you by the Front Row Network and NPR Illinois. Today I have one of the funniest comics I've ever had the opportunity to work with. They are just, I was a fan before, and then I got to work with them, and it was awesome. It was awesome. And, just a really just decent person. My guest is Rena Kalm. Rena has a one-hour comedy special. You can find that on her website, rena.com or renakalm.com. I even have it in front of me. I screwed it up reading it. I was trying to do it off memory. You see, you had a goal of of performing in all 50 states. You got stuck at 45, and that's not your fault.
Yeah.
So welcome, Rena. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi. Thanks. Good to see you, even in this capacity.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Of course.
It's funny you said Rena.com because that's like, it used to be that way on like the header. There's no way to make that the actual website, but
right.
I don't have a middle name, and I always said if I did, it would be Dorothy, so I could be Rena.com, but it's just Rena.com, and that was really kind of the intro. Thank you.
Let's back up, because I didn't know that. You don't have a middle name?
No. It's like an Israeli custom to not have a middle name. I was born there, and my parents like wanted to move back someday. So me and my youngest brother both don't have middle names, just really Hebrew first names.
I get it. I've got a very white guy name. Very.
Oh my gosh. Larry is one of the whitest names that's ever happened.
However, I have African-American friends. It sounds so racist to say it like that, but they tell me that Larry Smith.
Oh, my. No, I'm just kidding.
I have 2.5.
You're going to start the whole thing over.
I'm just going to edit. You know what? Yeah. We're done. I'm just going to shut the computer down and leave the house.
Yeah. Now, I think Lawrence can be like a black guy, but Larry feels like a white guy.
Yeah. 100%. Although Grandmaster Flash. Sorry, a friend of mine sent me a song today and said, if you don't make this one of your bumpers for your show, I'm going to be very upset. Grandmaster Flash has a song called Larry's Dance Theme.
Oh, okay.
It's.
I was wondering where you were going. I'm like, if you think Grandmaster Flash counts as that half of your 2.5 black friends, then it's like, not okay.
2.5 black friends coming to CBS this fall.
Hey, that would be a pretty huge step for them to have that many black male leads on a sitcom.
Absolutely. So. 100% correct.
Just a white guy, though, talking about how he knows black people.
Yeah. Yeah, and just constantly. Oh, God. Anyway, no, I shouldn't go. Anyway, I should not say that. I should not say what I was about to say, because this is, if it were my show, like my show, I would probably say it and be like, eh, what happened? But this is going to go on NPR Illinois, and no one wants to hear some of the things.
Yeah, I mean, I might not want to finish the interview, depending on what it is. But
it was just going to be really dumb, and I was like, no, don't.
This is elevated. This is like the real deal. We got to keep it classy.
Well, I did ask them. I was like, what restrictions do you have for me? And they're like, we'll put an E next to your show so everyone understands. I was like, that's great. The E for explicit.
It's explicit. Not everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, not the video game rating. Yeah. So I want to know more. Okay, you did an hour special. So tell me about that. You recorded an hour and put it on your website. I think it's special.
It is special. I'm very proud of it. I was hoping to finish performing in all 50 states, and I would have finished. I had them all scheduled for, it would have been finished a couple weeks ago. And I wanted to finish that goal so that I could record this hour I've been doing. However, it's transformed over time, so I could say, like, these jokes work everywhere, you know, in this country anyway. So that was kind of like what was stopping me from recording what I'd been performing until this moment. And then right before we all got shut down, I had a headlining weekend at the Jukebox in Peoria, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, just one of all of the places that I go to perform, of all of the clubs, of all of the rooms, there's something about the Jukebox in Peoria that is, I mean, you've been there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of these places. There's that old showbiz saying of like, if it plays in Peoria, it'll play anywhere. Uh-huh. And it's kind of an insult to the people of Peoria, the origins of that saying. It's kind of meant to say like they're kind of dumb. So if it'll work there, it'll work. That's really, if you look it up, it's kind of mean. And I don't think that way about them, but I do feel that Illinois, the Midwest, is such a great test market for what'll work. That's why I'm glad I started in Chicago. There's a lot of reasons for that. But yeah, so anyway, at the jukebox in Peoria, they've got a camera in the ceiling that has to be a VHS tape. I mean, you watch it and you're like, what year have we traveled back to? But I kind of like that. Kind of gives it a little bit of a vaudeville flair. Uh-huh. And yeah, I was really happy with that set. And I was really thrilled when I found out that it had been recorded, because, you know, when you know your recording is never when it goes as well as it should. So, yeah, I'm really grateful that I got that set right before lockdown started, and then extra grateful that the first place I ended up quarantining, because I'm went all in on this comedy thing, living on the road full time. So luckily, when quarantine started, I was able to stay with my cousin and his wife in Vegas, and extra lucky that he happens to do a lot of like AV stuff with like audio video. Wow. He helped me get it together better than it would have been, and feel like it was on purpose. He helped me edit it together a little bit better. So
see, and I, yeah, it looks, it has a really cool look to it. It looks good.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I had seen some of the shots before you'd even posted it, because you had put up some pictures, and I was like, this looks cool. It just looks cool. Yeah. I didn't realize that it was on that old of a camera. So,
I mean, I don't know if it's VHS, but it is not current.
It's just somebody up in the ceiling cranking an old 8mm to record.
The jukebox, I love that club so much, but they've struggled for business in the last year. I feel, and like little things where, I mean, it's, and he's kept that place running for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the ceiling even collapsed last year. Yeah. So if you know anything about the jukebox, just knowing that was recorded in the ceiling of the jukebox, and I can't believe they launched up there, is just perfect. So I put that out, and I'm really happy with, you know, having put that out there. I don't know if I'll go back to those jokes again, you know?
Right. Right. I get that. Now, you also, which I think is a really cool idea, you have, as some of your merch, you have a book that
I do. You sell.
It's such a cool idea. It's so unique. Remind me the name.
It's called Once Upon a Time, Legend of a Size Queen. That's SIGH, Size Queen. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of everything I've really done has kind of just seemed like the right thing to do. And I was posting so many one-liners and puns on social media over the years that, I mean, I don't know what that was for, if not to compile them into an actual piece of, you know, what I make and be able to sell that. And I love being able to sell them at shows, because most of those jokes, all of the jokes in the book, are not jokes that I tell on stage. So, and yeah, like I said, the album or whatever I was planning on recording, I hadn't quite gotten to that moment yet that I felt ready to do that. So I was excited to have something that I could sell, like a physical copy of my comedy that was, you know, something else.
Right. Right. And it's not a rehash of what you're doing on stage. It's completely different.
And honestly, the way it came together made me really happy. There was a lot of artists in Chicago. I mean, I couldn't afford to hire an illustrator. So instead I got the bonus of having a lot of my friends who are artists contribute to the book. And so there's a lot of art from different people that I've met over the years, illustrating some of the puns, and it is available on Amazon. You can definitely get that on the internet.
Nice. Cause I was about to say, tell everyone where they can find it.
Yeah.
That's good. Now, something else I want to point out is your Instagram feed is, completely ridiculously gorgeous. The pictures you take are sometimes when I'm when I've been sitting in my cubicle, when I could still be at a cubicle, Which I say when I could be, when I was forced to be at a cubicle.
You could build a cubicle in your house.
I could. I don't want to. I don't want to do that.
Imagine that person and how gray their insides are.
Oh my, yeah, if you're like, I can't concentrate unless I build this cubicle to work from home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh, God. It had to be that institutional, like, pale blue. Not even baby blue, just that real sad, empty, like...
Yep, I eat my grape nuts and I have a seat and...
No sugar, please. No sugar.
Right.
The grape nuts, I only put water on them. Milk is too spicy.
Yeah.
But the picture... Well, thank you. Absolutely, the pictures that you take are amazing. And they honestly have gotten me through some pretty gloomy days.
That means so much to me. Thank you.
Absolutely. That's... So,
me too.
Yeah,
you know.
I bet. So like, what you've been, again, we said 45 states. Where's been your favorite place to go? Like,
I mean, I get that question a lot. Somebody just messaged me asking, like, where's a good place to go hiking? I'm like, well, that's vague. Like, where are you? Like, where are you going? I'm really big on finding cool stuff to look at no matter where I'm going. And I think part of why I love touring as much as I do or did, I still love it. but I think part of why that suits me is that it keeps me off of scrolling my apps, and I'm an active participant in just looking at the sky, like looking at the clouds, looking at my surroundings. And I like just being able to see the country. Like, I love the feeling of like kind of trudging through every inch of this bish. Can I say bish?
Yeah, for sure. Remember, we get the E for explicit, so we're good.
Well, I mean, there's something about it that I really have always romanticized, the idea of traveling the country, and it really doesn't disappoint. I mean, it's hard to say that when you're in Illinois, honestly. But once you get out of this little pocket, I mean, this is where those clouds come in really beautifully. And I really take advantage of those sunsets. Yeah, you know, there's cool stuff to look at anywhere. But to answer your question, my favorite places to drive through have to be Arizona and Utah. It's tough to pick between the two. Colorado's also quite nice, but I would say that Arizona is just incredible. It's just incredible to look at every inch of it. Utah also, same thing, where you're just like, I can't believe this is how the world really looks. Little parts of Nevada also, just that whole Southwest area. And I was really excited to do, because until I got there, my favorite drive was up the West Coast. And I was supposed to drive up the West Coast in April. So I was excited to do that again. But I will do that again someday. However, even if it's because I'm hitchhiking, but I will make it happen.
This can't last forever, right? Right.
Right.
It can't last. Oh, it's so sad.
I mean, I don't know if I'll be able to pick up touring again. A lot of people have said stuff like, oh, you just haven't finished it yet. And it's like, I mean, I'm not trying to even imagine the state of comedy after this right now. It feels impossible to actually imagine.
Right.
And I'm really happy that people like my pictures, because I'm trying to kind of convert that into, a side hustle, I guess, but it might hopefully be busy enough to be a hustle, but I'm trying to find, I've found a unique way to sell my photos online. I haven't got all of my gear yet to, I feel weird talking about it because I don't have like an example of, well, here's, look, I did do some prints. Hang on. Oh, you can't see. Never mind. It's a podcast. Anyway, they look great.
Well,
they look
great. I can see.
You can see, like, this one's Bryce Canyon in Utah.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of good lighting in here. But I'm going to be selling some prints as well. Here's the Grand Canyon. This one's a real fave.
Wow.
But I'm going to be selling these on my Etsy store. I'll be selling prints, but I'm also figuring out how to put the images onto wood. So I'm figuring out how to do some real crafty stuff over here. And I don't do comedy anymore. I'm a craftsman.
I just put pictures on wood now. That's all I do.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of feels like a beautiful thing for me as far as the fact that, like, the book, all of it, the pictures, I never would have been able to take pictures of some of these places if I wasn't traveling to get to gigs, and comedy's never going to die. But for right now, this feels like a good positive thing to do with my time in a time where, as much as we all probably need to laugh, not so much is funny. So,
right. Yeah. Well, and it's hard to talk to a comedian and not talk about the state of comedy currently. And it is it's hard to see where that landscape is going to, how it's going to evolve when this all has ended. You know, are people going to rush out to shows? Are there going to be shows? Or is it just going to be a lot of headliners that are just going to take as much as possible going forward? You know, it's really hard to, and I say yeah. headliners, I'm talking like Netflix special type people.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah. I feel like people at my level, I mean, there's people who have surpassed my credentials that are, all, you know, desperate as well. Mm-hmm. So for me to focus on that right now, it doesn't feel, like I said, like, comedy is the reason for this new thing that's even happening. So I don't feel like it's anything's over. I just feel like a real evolution right now to figure out how I reach people now.
Right. Well, and how you keep working that, the creative side of yourself when yes. what it, you dedicated every second of your life to for so long. I say this from personal experience. I'm not trying to project, but it seems like a pretty universal feeling, what you dedicate every living, breathing, waking second to just runs into a wall, and you go, okay, yeah. I'll take a break for 2 weeks, and then you realize that 2 weeks is going to be God knows how long.
When people talk about what of their plans got canceled this summer. I mean, me living in the car and touring like I was not a permanent setup. It was definitely like, this is the time in my life that I am going to do this, that I can do this, and that I will do this. And so to have it end, to have everything shut down in the middle of that part of my life makes it feel almost easier for me to just kind of say, okay, well, what's next? Because this doesn't sustain. I don't have, comedy wasn't a part of my life. Comedy was my entire life. Mm-hmm. So, that makes it seem like it would be harder to let go of, but for me, it actually feels like I said, part of this evolution where, and this bleeds into kind of like, you know, some of what we're talking about anyway with comedy, of what you like and what you don't like. And I decided a couple years ago that what I was setting out to do with comedy, and like the reason why I do it, and the reason why I've given my entire life to it, and why it means so much to me, like, what is the motivator? Is it because you get two free glasses of freaking bar wine, and you know what I mean, get to see all of the Love's travel stops in Illinois? No, it's not because of that. It's because it makes people feel good, and that's the only reason to do it in my mind that's valid. And some people are just hilarious and I want to watch them, and they don't even maybe realize that that's the effect that it has. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, I decided a couple years ago while doing comedy that the reason for doing it, this is like right before I put my book out, was to try to make people feel good. And so in that way, I don't feel limited, because if that's what I want to do, I still have access to like ways to do that without comedy, you know?
Right. No, that's wow. Probably the most eloquent way that's been said so far in by anybody that I've heard.
Yeah, because I'm the fucking best, man. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. That's been this episode, and No,
that was still a comic. That was very funny.
It was so perfectly timed. Because I'll be honest, I'm sitting here and I'm listening and I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there was this little voice in the back of my head that was like, you should have something ready to go when she's done. And I was like, just listen. And then when it stopped, I was like, oh no. No, I just did bad interviewer stuff here. That's not.
No, I mean, really listening is an incredible interview skill. So thank you for validating my ramblings.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, your ramblings are great. Whatever. I know no one else can see this, but I'm going to. You have this beautiful backdrop behind you. With a vase and this beautiful antique chair and these wonderful curtains. And then you just picked up a gallon jug of water and took a swig out of it like a hillbilly.
That is accurate, 100%. I am so lucky to be staying in this house right now that I'm not going to lie. I feel like being here and surrounded by art, and it's all stuff that they like have collected. I'm in St. Louis. Christian Lawrence is a comic here. Him and his wife, Carrie, have just like built this incredible house out of stuff that they've just found.
That's good. Good. I'm glad you said, I assumed you were squatting.
No, I mean, this is a fancy squat for sure. I really feel like it's motivated me to think creatively as well as being nice to look at. But I do drink from a giant freaking gallon jug of water because, you know what? That's a part of, you know what? Actually, this comes from comedy too, this gallon of water. Because when I was in Chicago, I remember early on, Ramon Rivas used to stay on my couch sometimes when he was still, I think he's back in Cleveland now, which is good because why be anywhere that we all thought was important. Now paying rent to live in LA and New York when you can't even go outside. But he used to tour. He motivated me a lot to get out of Chicago and tour because he did it so well, and he taught me a lot about etiquette for crashing with people because he stayed with me a lot, and he always, I remember, would come in with a giant gallon of water, and I always was like, okay, like, he really takes care of himself.
That's some self-care we could all get behind. Look at that.
Yeah, drink water, man. Yeah, so I guess I'm still a little feral in that way. Cheers.
Nah, I have a Nalgene that I carry around with me almost everywhere, and it is, a lot of times, it's hot when I'm drinking it because it's been in the car or what have you, but it is a habit that I have. It's just, it's always with me, and it's easier and it's better than buying bottled water when you're thirsty.
Yeah, and it's less plastic if I get one big jug.
Exactly. No, it wasn't an insult. It was hillbilly is a term of endearment with me. You've met me.
Oh, I'm proud of you.
You've
I'm
seen me up close. I know what I look like.
Your name's Larry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not even Lawrence. It's Larry.
Larry's going to judge me for jugging.
Yeah, we were so, my hillbilly parents couldn't spell Lawrence. It was too many letters, but they knew they could get away with Larry. And so, hence, that's it.
Well, I think it suits you, and I'm really happy. I'm really happy that we've gotten to this part of the chat, to be honest.
This is the best part. I'm editing everything else out. We're just going to talk about the water bottle.
Yeah, it's real.
I was going to ask you about just the mindset of, and I know you mentioned it a little bit, the mindset of, to hell with it. If I'm doing this, I'm doing it. And you just, I mean, you essentially just left Chicago. And I know you had a couple pit stops, but you were like, I'm going to be on the road. And was it just like an epiphany that one day you just woke up and you're like, hell with this. This is what I'm doing because I have to do it. Or was it?
I mean, it wasn't like, I remember where I was when I decided, It also is not a thing, because even the way you just said that, the hell with this, this is something I've always wanted to do, I'm doing it. It was not that at all. And when people respond to what I'm doing with that kind of tone, it gives me immediate concern, because it's not a thing that anybody should glamorize, like living the way that I've lived, living like a hobo, like depending on favors from people I either know really well or met once. But it's not the way I did it was the most, it made sense, because I was traveling so much and I built up this web of paid gigs all over the country that it just didn't even make sense to be circling back to Chicago all the time and keeping an apartment there and paying for my life there. I never in my life would have imagined that when I started touring, that would be my full-time status.
Okay.
I mean, when you talk about going all in, I've been thinking about that a lot, especially when I'm getting set up for this Etsy store and everything, because the expression "go for broke" keeps coming in my head. And maybe going for broke is, I don't know if it's more or less scary when you have less money to get there, you know?
Right.
Like, oh man, I'm giving my last dime, $34. Yes.
Look, I've been in that situation where that last $34 is the most precious set of dollars you've ever had. I get it.
Well, it really was. I remember one time I mapped out a tour, and I think I had just spent money on like a little bit of merch, buttons or something like that, whatever I needed for my supplies. But basically I remember leaving Chicago and I took a screenshot of it. I left town with like $34 in my bank account, and I just had faith that I was going to make enough money from the gigs that I'd booked to make it to my, you know, make it back, really, you know, to make it there and back where I was going. And I did. I remember, you know, not turning a huge profit, but knowing that I had planned it well enough to feel safe in that. And it worked. And it was such an incredible feeling to come back and, like, you know, all my bills are paid, everything's fine. And then cut to that went around for a while. That went on for a while of, you know, just scraping through, making these tours happen. They became more and more profitable. And then I decided to do one. The longest I'd gone on the road, I think, was like 17 days. And I figured like 2 weeks was like my sweet spot before everything kind of fell apart mentally. But I really wanted to make it to Portland and the West Coast. And so I planned a summer tour that was all of June and July, pretty much. And it was like, I think at least 40 or 50 days. I just knew that like that tour was either, I mean, I knew it was going to change me. I didn't know if it would be a good or a bad change, but I knew life was going to be different. And that's when I got the book done so I could try to make it profitable, blah, blah, blah. And I was in Portland, and once I'd hit Portland, I just remember looking around and just being never more sure of anything, that I had to leave Chicago. And just, I didn't even make the goal of doing all 50 states until maybe even a year later. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that it was like I was ready to move on from Chicago. I'm not from Chicago. I moved there from Massachusetts. I don't know where my like next home is, but I just knew that I was done with that part of my life. Then I made my way down the West Coast and all the way through to Texas, where my parents have a farm, and asked them that summer, because I made this decision in middle of June, but by the time I got there, it was middle of July, and I asked them if I could just stash my stuff in their basement and, you know, keep their address. And they said yes, and it's everything's been different. They're trying to like sell their farm now, and all my stuff's in storage. But yeah, that was how that happened.
Well, I mean, it it sounds like they were at least pretty supportive and agreeable. I mean, not that they had a, the only thing they had a choice in at that point was to say yes or no to the storage, but, you know.
Yeah, they seemed pretty encouraging at the beginning. I don't know if it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, then it starts getting into personal family stuff, but my sure. stepdad had a real, you know, get off my property vibe about him. So, and also I feel like that's kind of been a struggle this whole time where I've seen incredible support from my family when it comes to like understanding that I'm doing this weird thing with my life with an uncertain outcome and no health insurance. They've been very supportive at times, but I think especially when it comes to him, there's been a little bit of, I don't know, I don't think it's for everybody to understand, you know?
No, it's not. Well,
it's crazy to imagine, though. I'll say this. I mean, this was difficult, but I was headlining the Velveeta Room in Austin this last February, and that was a huge deal for me. I was very excited about it. My parents were going to come to a show. They live about 45 minutes away, but I told them they didn't have to because it was such a late night, and I didn't want them to have to drive back to the farm at midnight. And they were super relieved to not have to go, which I was like, okay, you could be a little less excited about now. But, you know, at the show, I mean, there were the people featuring for me, their families were there. And like, I remember the last night I was leaving the house, my parents' farm, and my stepfather asked me if I had a show that night. I was like all dressed up. I'm like, yeah, like, you know I do. Like, you see everything mm-hmm. I post online, and you were supposed to come to it, but yes. And he goes, wow, people pay money to go see you? And I'm just like, yeah, the first show sold out, actually. And yeah. Then he's like, well, I hope you figure out a way to get some of that money. And it's like, do you think I'm an idiot? Like, and I like kind of left the house that night shouting, it's a real job, and slamming the door. And it's kind of crazy to imagine getting to that point where that weekend I'm getting messages from my peers and colleagues and people who have been doing this longer than me, congratulating me or asking me about how to get into this club. And still in my own family, I'm like, when I told the people at the club that I'd shouted, it's a real job, before I left the house that night, it made me laugh for a second, but it's actually very sad to have that dynamic.
Yeah, well, and I can't did not get too into too much personal family stuff. I completely get it. There are some people that I'm also related to that have that didn't quite understand the pursuit until I explained to them, until they couldn't get tickets to a show I was headlining. Because I told them, I was like, you need to get tickets. This is going to sell out. We're probably going to add a second show and that's going to sell out too. And
yeah,
they failed to listen to me. And then they came back and said, well, it's sold out. And I said, well, I told you.
Yeah.
And then, one of the individuals, you know, I'd always called it that the exact wording was that little comedy hobby. And then I lost my temper a little bit, and I said, do you know what that made me just that night? Do you know how much money that made me? And then I explained it, and they went, oh. And from that point forward, it was something that was tangible somehow.
My stepfather doesn't have any idea how much money I make at any of these things. I don't ask my family for money. And I mean, I have my stuff there, but it's kind of, I've been doing it long enough that I'm like a doctor of comedy, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
I'm a professional and I make my living from something that's really hard to get good enough at to make a living from, or at least I did. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard when people don't like understand that. But I also think that the people that are the slowest to understand things like that are the people that even though they have the least interesting things to say, have this like kind of jealousy that people want to hear you.
Yes. You know? Yes. I think that's 100% like, correct.
I've never heard this. I mean, if I wanted somebody to tell me what the weather was outside, I'd book him in a heartbeat, but I have a lot of confidence right now knowing that he'll absolutely never hear this. So,
well, good. So just, you know, I'm, thank you for sharing that though. It's really appreciated.
Yeah, I'm sure
that.
He won't listen. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, he's not going to listen to some idiot schmuck from Illinois podcast on NPR. I guarantee it.
Definitely not NPR. If this was Fox News, we might be talking. But.
Exactly. From the way you described it, I was like, we're NPR. We're camouflaged. We're safe.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, since I'm bad at transitions and I've not figured out a good way to transition to the next segment.
No, that's okay. Yeah, we'll figure that out. I gotta record another one soon.
Yeah, I know. I've got, so, you know, I the focus of the show is, I'm fascinated with what makes people laugh and what doesn't make them laugh. And in particular, you know, just anybody, but in particular, funny people, I think have a particular insight into that. And this is where I get to nerd out about comedy. Because it's, I love it. I love the science, the scientific idea of comedy and the spiritual idea of comedy. So we're going to start with the one that we can get out of the way, because it's also fun to talk about, but not as much as the other one. But what is it that doesn't, like, what type of comedy doesn't make you laugh? Like for me, the movie Step Brothers, no thank you. It just doesn't do it for me. I understand why people like it. It's not for me. So I want to hear what it is about for you.
I think part of what makes anybody laugh, part of like the equation of what's funny, is the element of surprise. And so I think that maybe like by the time they made Step Brothers, for instance, it's like we kind of already seen that dynamic from the two of them so often that I think it's funny, and I love watching both of them like play together. So there's that comedic value to it. But even just Will Ferrell movies alone, I feel like he really did so many movies that were like the formula was a sports thing. You know, it's like how many dodgeball, freaking figure skating, how many different sports this guy did movies where it's that comedy formula. Like, so like growing up, we had like Jim Carrey, where even though his comedic roles like were kind of all this like exaggerated goofball, I felt like the formula of the movies was so varied that like I never got bored of watching them. So I guess like I get bored when it's predictable. I get bored when there's like a clear formula for the most part. Then again, like I do love a formula set like on crazy, like flipped around, and just anything weird is usually like has my interest. But again, that's the element of surprise.
Yeah.
The kind of comedy that I really don't love is mean comedy. Sometimes like I'll admit like I'm not better than laughing at when somebody's getting roasted really well, or, you know, if somebody looks weird and somebody makes fun of them, or if somebody doesn't look weird and somebody makes fun of them, is even better, you know, but that's just not my style. I don't like making fun of people.
There's a difference, I think, between roasting somebody and insulting somebody. Like when you roast something at somebody, it's all in good fun. It's good natured.
I would beg to consider the fact that maybe there isn't a huge difference.
Okay.
Like, I know it's all in good fun, but making fun is also implied fun. It's in the title. And I don't think there's a difference between, I mean, yeah, if you're actually being mean, then that's not fun at all, you know? But I don't think there's much of a difference. I think that I've done roast shows where people have had good burns on me that I've laughed at, because I know that oh, it's all in good fun, but it actually feels terrible. Well, and when people laugh at those things, you know, there's something like, oh, haha, well, I guess this doesn't bother me anymore because I laughed at it with all these people. But I think it does the opposite. I think it puts things in your head that are insecurities.
Well, absolutely. Because I've done roast shows, and it, initially, yeah, it hits you. And it's like you said, it's that element of surprise. Comedy is like a magic trick. If it's done right, the audience has no idea how you did it. And it's the sharp left turn. And I've laughed, and then 2 days later, it'll hit me what the joke was.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh my God, is that really how I am? Is that what people think of me? And it does sink in. So I'm with you. I don't like mean.
I mean, like Jeff Ross, Dave Attell, like they turn it into an art form where it's so silly that it's not, they're making fun of the, like they're making like poetry out of, you know, mocking people, but I don't think they're really like picking on people's insecurities. And I think 99% of roast shows are picking on people's insecurities.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think I know I'm with you. I know I've laughed at roasts, like the Comedy Central roasts.
Yeah, I'm not saying that even those make me uncomfortable. The people on the hot seat at those Comedy Central roasts, I mean, what a desperate move to have to pretend to be okay with hearing all that shit about you, that maybe you've just seen enough of it on Twitter that you've become desensitized or whatever it is that you have to just like pretend as Justin Bieber, who's like a barely 21 years old or however old he was when he had that roast. It's like pretending like this doesn't bother you. It bothers him. Right. They all that stuff bothers them. And then it goes back to my like moral, like the reason of doing comedy is making people feel better. So I don't really like the idea of making one group of people laugh by making somebody else feel bad.
That makes sense. I dig that. Good answer.
Cool.
Good answer. You don't need my approval, but good answer. Okay, let's talk about the fun one though. This is the one I really. What is it, or who is it, or either one? What or who just cracks you up, and not me? I know you were about to say Larry Smith. God, he's hilarious.
I got to work with.
And you can't do that on my. It's my show. Everyone knows I'm friggin' hilarious. But so, what is it that that you love?
I mean, everyone loves a fart. I'm sorry, but like, nobody's going to be like, that wasn't funny.
Right?
A well-timed fart. Like, nobody's ever going to be like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. Like, a fart in protest is hilarious.
Like, I don't necessarily like all bathroom humor, but the sound of a fart itself is just, that's just nature's punchline. But yeah, I love just like weirdos. Like, I love anybody who's like, probably the reason I moved to Chicago to do comedy is from watching Strangers with Candy and watching Amy Sedaris as Jerry Blank and just like, oh my God, you can be that much of a freaking creepy weirdo, and it's so funny, you know.
That's hilarious. I actually just interviewed somebody yesterday, and
really?
They're one of the loves they brought up.
I really like that. That's you interviewed somebody.
You talked to another human.
Who was it?
Scott Hines from Nashville. He's a musician.
Okay.
He was he played Carl Perkins in Million Dollar Quartet out in Vegas for about 3 years and then moved back to Nashville and has a band there.
Awesome.
Not to plug him any more than I already did yesterday on the show.
No, but it's so cool that you both brought up Amy Sedaris.
Yeah, it's it's just crazy, a crazy coincidence. Or is it? Maybe I'm formulating. Like,
well, she's also coming out with her new season right now, I think. So she's been real popping up on Instagram lately. So yeah. Maybe everybody's mind.
It's a brilliant show. It's a brilliant show. But yeah, Strangers with Candy was such, and I think, like, I really feel like it didn't get the love it deserved at the time.
Sure.
But I think with the style of comedy, I think like today, it's I feel like it's starting to get more traction again.
It's super influential, even if however many people actually watched it at the time. And maybe some of that also has to do with how much of a huge career Stephen Colbert's had now. But yeah, I mean, that's the exact opposite, I feel like, of roasting, where, I mean, she makes herself look so absurd and ridiculous that it's like, you know, there's one episode of Strangers with Candy that I just thought of just because I was just talking about the roasting thing, where she knows all the guys in school are going to ruin this, I don't know, presentation assembly where she's winning something, you know? And she knows they're going to make fun of her and ruin it. And they did. They made a huge banner to like make fun of her. But before they could like put out their sign or whatever, she lets this huge sign down that just says, "I'm a stupid whore." And it's so beautiful because they can't make fun of her after she says that, you know? So
it's, yeah. And she is just one of those people that vanishes into whatever role she's playing. And I know on...
with an overbite.
Yes! Well, and she plays how many different characters on... It's At Home with... Isn't it At Home with Amy Sedaris is the current show.
I actually haven't seen it.
Oh!
I don't watch anything anymore.
It's a scandal. Yeah. I really like this old show, but to hell with this new show. But yeah,
no, I'm not watching like Comedy Central roasts instead. But
she plays, I forget how many different characters, like five different characters on that show. And even when she's playing herself, it's so over the top. But not in a bad way. It's very...
Right. I mean, I've seen like a lot of clips and stuff, yeah. So I know what you're speaking of. I just haven't actually watched the show.
It's...
But yeah, I love her character work. It's amazing. And yeah, I'll watch that.
Yeah, I love a beautiful weirdo.
Yeah.
You know, there's a handful of comics that you just... that I've watched, and I'm like, God, they're just a beautiful weirdo. And that's
like,
a compliment.
Something's wrong. Something is wrong with this person, but it's working, you know?
In a wonderful way. You know, yeah. By no means is that an insult when I say a beautiful weirdo. I know a lot of beautiful weirdos. And, you know, I only hope to one day have someone else look at me and go, "You know, man, you're a beautiful weirdo." And I'd be like, "Thanks. I appreciate that. I really want that for myself."
You're a pretty beautiful weirdo. I mean, you know, I don't think this is the weirdest or most beautiful moment of our lives, but I do think that it's up there.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, and this is, to go back to, yeah, this is a different time, and it's a time, as an understatement, it's a time for those of us that were creatives to... I almost didn't like using that term, but those of us that are creatives that have to get up in front of people live to change directions and figure out what to do from here. And it's not easy to move forward. But you know, this is where we are. So we either sit here and turn to dust or we just keep moving forward.
That was beautiful.
Aw, thanks. Sometimes I say words real pretty. Well,
you know what? I just feel confident knowing that going for broke again, whatever I'm doing creatively, my stepfather probably doesn't understand. So long as I can keep doing stuff that befuddles him, I'm doing something.
You're doing something right. And the rest of us beautiful weirdos will back you up. So you've got
us. yeah.
So
you hear that, NPR? We're gonna bum out my stepdad.
And they just got more donations. They're like, "Ooh, bum out a stepdad." that's what level of donation. It's the highest level. It's like, yeah. You know, you can be a member, you can be a star member, or you can bum out a stepdad. I will take bum out a stepdad. Two tote bags, please.
That is the NPR crowd. It's the lyric from the Mountain Goats, that look on my stepfather's face. Everybody that donates to NPR was just like, exactly. Yes. That's the track.
And also, good job on the Mountain Goats reference. There's not been enough of that on the show yet, so thank you for doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you got to get going, so I want you to tell everyone again how to keep track of you, and not in a creeper way, but just how to keep track of you, how to find you.
Fine line.
It really is.
Yeah, definitely. My website, I'm just getting that finished and all spruced up right now. RenaCalm.com. No www, don't get it twisted, just RenaCalm.com, or just Google me, you know, you can find me pretty easily. But I will say that since the day we all got locked in, I have committed to posting these nature pictures every day, even if I'm not in a good mood, or even if there's horrible news in the news feed, to try to just put at least one picture, usually a lot. People should give me credit for sometimes putting up like 10, but I always put at least one picture up every day that should help break up some of your news feeds. So follow me on Instagram at RenaCalm to see some of my favorite views from all over the country, and yeah, some beautiful, weird ramblings along with them.
And it is. It's one of my favorite Instagrams to follow. So thanks for doing that. And absolutely. And thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it. I know you're busy. You're a busy person in quarantine with all these the recordings and such. So
today's a real studio busy day, but yeah, I've been getting real busy getting all these crafts done. So
that's awesome.
Been doing some woodworking.
Just you and Nick Offerman, just woodworking comedians.
Yeah. I just want to do a movie about psychedelics next.
Ooh, yes. I know. I watched that and I was like, I could have been on that. Why didn't anyone ask me? I got stories. Sorry, Mom. Now you know.
A lot of my pictures are assisted by psychedelics. Or at least they were when I was taking them, if you know what I mean. You know, mushrooms. I've experimented with microdosing quite a bit.
Excellent. And you know what? It's legal in Denver, so just get on board.
You know what would happen is that this would be the only part my stepdad listened to.
Yes. I knew it. That's all you would get. All right. Well, thank you, Rena. I appreciate having you on. And
thanks, Larry.
All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. This has been another episode of Convince Me.
And now, for those of you who are completely unfamiliar with Larry's dance theme, by Grandmaster Flash.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.